bag and you give me 10 bucks? What's the catch? Are you going to ditch me or something?
The goats and I will wait for you here, Seth said. If I say run, you should run, but otherwise you can walk.
Knox searched the area suspiciously. Is the bag full of snakes? Are there booby traps?
Your cousin isn't completely stupid, Newell said.
I don't see any ogres, Doran reported.
Can you make those goats be quiet? Knox asked.
Can I kick him? Newell asked. Just a little kick?
Or a bite, Doran proposed. Goats bite sometimes.
Focus, Seth said. I promise I didn't set up any tricks or traps, but there are rumors that this area is haunted.
Knox laughed incredulously.
That's hilarious. You actually believe in ghosts?
I don't know about ghosts, Seth said. Wraiths and zombies, maybe. Or revenants.
Or ogres,
Newell said, stifling a laugh. Knox shook his head.
You're worse than Tess. If you're trying to scare me, it won't work. I laugh when I watch monster movies. Halloween is one big joke. Your oatmeal breath might be scary, but ghosts? Seriously?
You don't ever get creeped out? Seth asked. Like at a graveyard or in a dark room?
Why would I? Knox scoffed. How are dead bodies buried in a box underground going to hurt me? What are the headstones going to do? Tell me the date somebody died? And why should darkness bother me unless I'm trying to find something or walk around?
Imaginary stuff isn't scary at all. This will be the easiest $10 I ever made.
This guy is priceless, Newell said. I've never met anybody with his eyes this closed to our secrets.
He has no imagination, Doran said. I get all kinds of freaky thoughts in a dark place.
Wow, Seth said. You're pretty brave.
It's not brave to be realistic, Knox said. Walking a tightrope is brave. Going to war is brave. This is nothing.
It's still worth $10, Seth said.
It better not be booby-trapped, Knox warned, starting toward the bag.
I didn't sabotage it, Seth said. I can't guarantee it isn't guarded by ogres or something.
Knox snickered and started toward the bag.
I still can't sense any ogres, Doran said, sniffing the air.
There's an ogre around, Newell said. They're not the brightest bunch, but they wouldn't leave that bag out in the open unguarded.
Unless they got distracted, Doran suggested.
It takes imagination to get distracted, Newell said. Once an ogre gets an idea, he holds on tight. They're mad we trespassed, and they think we'll be back for the loot, so they'll be guarding it. Mark my words.
Doran fitted an arrow to his bowstring.
Doesn't hurt to be ready.
Could Knox see your bow?
Seth whispered.
I doubt it, Doran said. Humans without the milk don't normally see our clothes or what we're holding. They just see a goat.
Seth watched his cousin traipse across the clearing. The area remained quiet. Knox probed the duffel bag with his toe. He obviously was still worried about some kind of prank. Hands on his hips, he looked around, glanced back at Seth, then picked it up.
An ogre charged from cover at the far end of the clearing. The onrushing Goliath was nearly twice the height of Knox, with thick limbs and rough reddish skin. The huge boils on his brutish face looked almost like additional noses. He clutched a bulky club, practically a log, studded with metal flanges and knobs.
"Now that is a supreme gigantic overlord,"
came a voice from Seth's pocket. Knox turned and faced the oncoming threat, feet rooted to the ground. The ogre raised his club, closing fast, his face a study in rage.
"Do I shoot?"
Doran asked, bow drawn, sighting down the arrow.
"Wait for it," Newell said softly.
The ogre staggered to a stop in front of Knox, club
poised to strike, ready to pound the trespasser into the ground like a tent stake, a leer of triumph on his cankered lips. The muscles in his powerful arms tensed and bunched, but the great club remained upraised. His expression shifted from ecstatic fury to bafflement to frustration.
"Knox, run!" Seth called.
The words broke whatever blend of shock and stupor was holding his cousin immobilized. Knox came dashing towards Seth, eyes wide.
"Bear!"
he shouted.
"Bear!"
The ogre sniffed the air, spat, then brandished his club in one hand, biceps swelling like a watermelon. He pointed at Seth, eyes blazing.
"You!"
"That's our cue," Newell said. "This way!" Seth called to his cousin, turning and running.
Even if the ogre couldn't follow Seth beyond the boundaries of his territory, he could theoretically throw stones or boulders.
"That's Mung," Newell panted, racing alongside Seth. "Not the biggest ogre at Fablehaven, but probably the meanest."
Seth glanced over his shoulder. The ogre had already passed Knox and was almost at the border of his territory.
"Hurry, Knox!" Seth called.
He jumped over a fallen branch and shoved through a tangle of ferns.
"Uh-oh,"
Doran said.
"What?"
Newell replied.
"Mung just left his territory."
Seth glanced back again. The ogre was beyond the tree where they had watched Knox and still charging hard. Knox trailed behind.
"He can't do that!"
Newell shouted.
"And yet he has,"
Doran replied. The news prodded Seth to maximum speed.
"What do we do?" "Run for the yard," Newell advised. "He seemed to have his eyes on you. We'll try to slow him." "What about Knox?"
Seth asked.
"I'll stay with him," Doran promised. "Herd him back to the house."
The satyr slowed, and Seth was running alone. He knew the way back to the yard, but it would take a miracle for him to outrun the ogre. Stealing another look back, Seth saw Newell and Doran kneeling behind bushes with their rope stretched between them. Mung roared, smashing through the undergrowth like a runaway tank. Seth caught his foot on a root, but managed to stay on his feet. He dodged a tree, leaped over a mossy stone, and then looked back just as the ogre reached the satyrs. Both goatmen had their hooves dug into the ground and strained to keep the rope tight. The trip line caught Mung just above the ankles. The ogre plunged forward, huge body carving a trench in the forest floor, simultaneously slinging Newell and Doran into the air. Seth kept running. When he peered back again, Mung was already on his feet, stampeding forward. Newell and Doran had bought him some extra seconds, but at the rate the ogre was gaining, Seth knew he had no chance of reaching the yard.
"How?"
he muttered in frustration.
"You sent in Knox,"
came a voice from his pocket.
"What?"
Seth gasped, still sprinting.
"The ogre couldn't attack Knox because he was innocent,"
Calvin chirped.
"But you sent him in from outside the ogre's domain. That must have freed the ogre to chase you." "A little late for that info,"
Seth grumbled as he weaved between tree trunks.
"I'm not sure,"
Calvin said.
"Just a guess. Don't forget that ogres run in straight lines."
"Huh?"
"An angry ogre charges straight for his prey,"
Calvin said. Seth remembered Newell and Doran teaching him the same thing. How could it prove useful?
"The gully!" "You're a genius," Seth panted. "Common knowledge,"
Calvin replied. Seth knew he couldn't reach the yard ahead of the ogre, not in a fair foot race. But if he temporarily veered away from the house, he could cross the gully. The little bridge wasn't too far. Branches whipped at Seth as he turned toward the gully. Hopefully his explorations of the area with Newell and Doran would pay off. If the bridge wasn't where he remembered, the ogre would have him pinned up against a steep drop. As the ogre gained on him, Seth heard the brute's breath coming in slobbery gasps, like a snorting bull. The little footbridge came into view, and Seth ran straight at it. He pounded across and then turned, running along the edge of the gully. If the ogre used the bridge, Seth knew he would soon be mashed into paste. All the ogre needed to do was take the slightly longer way around. But Mung charged straight at him, heedless of the footbridge, eyes promising murder. Having made it about 20 yards away from the bridge, Seth slowed to wave his arms and stick out his tongue. The ogre dashed toward the gully, vengeful eyes fixed on Seth. As the oversized brute sprang from the far side, one beefy arm outstretched, the other raising his club to strike, Seth staggered back. Mung was so big and coming so fast that it looked like he might clear the ravine. The club came whistling down and struck the near side of the gully hard enough for Seth to feel the vibrations. Then Mung fell out of sight.
"Keep going!"
Doran called from a distance. Heart hammering, Seth took off for the yard. The gully was at least 30 feet deep here. Could Mung climb it? It got shallower if the ogre went far enough in either direction, but that could buy Seth enough time to get to the house. Glancing back, Seth saw hands on the edge of the gully, then a head. Now without his club, Mung heaved himself up. As the ogre started running, an arrow struck Mung in the calf from behind. Seth heard Doran whoop. The ogre stumbled, but kept coming.
"Can you make it?" Calvin asked.
"That's the question," Seth replied.
He had stretched his lead enough that there was a chance. Seth couldn't think of any other obstacles like the gully that he could use to trip up the ogre.
"It'll be close."
Chapter 8 Reprimanded. Kendra watched as fairies fluttered around Tess, sometimes alighting on her head, shoulders, and arms. To her younger cousin, the tiny winged women looked like common hummingbirds, butterflies, and dragonflies. But Tess seemed elated nonetheless.
"They think I'm a real fairy," Tess said in an excited whisper. "Look how the butterflies follow me. This never happened to me before."
"She really does worship us," said a lithe golden fairy. "Isn't it adorable how she tries to look like us?" a scarlet fairy chimed in.
"Pathetic and insulting," accused a white, furry fairy. "She puts on a set of dumpy cosmetic wings and fancies herself one of our sisters."
"Hopeless and flattering," giggled a fairy with dragonfly wings. "She aspires to heights she could never climb."
Several other fairies tittered. Kendra folded her arms and held back comments. She didn't want to disturb Tess's happy mood with responses that might hint at what the fairies were saying about her. She also didn't want to look like she was scolding hummingbirds.
"I can almost hear them laughing,"
Tess said with a smile, raising a fairy on her finger to her nose. Judging by the wings, Kendra assumed the tiny woman looked like a butterfly. The fairy kissed the tip of Tess's nose.
"You're a cutie,"
the fairy said, then dove from her finger in a gliding swoop. Tess blinked.
"Did you hear that? I felt like I heard her talking."
Several of the fairies scattered. Those that remained hovered at a greater distance.
"She couldn't have heard us," the golden fairy said. "She hasn't had any milk," the scarlet fairy added.
Tess looked around at the fairies.
"They seem startled. Did I scare them?"
"It's hard to guess what butterflies are thinking," Kendra hedged. Tess squinted at them.
I don't think they're normal butterflies.
Part of Kendra wanted to tell her little cousin to follow her instincts. She was perceptive. But Kendra knew it wasn't her place to reveal the big secret of Fablehaven. Maybe they just...
Seth came dashing out of the woods, face red and sweaty, eyes wide with alarm. He glanced back over one shoulder before collapsing onto the grass. From the forest came huffing gasps and the splintery crack of branches snapping. Something big was crashing toward the yard.
"What did you do?"
Kendra called. Her brother hadn't appeared this flustered in a long time.
"Nothing,"
Seth said, getting back on his feet, still breathing hard. He wiped sweat from his eyes.
"Just having a race."
A massive ogre erupted from the trees and charged onto the lawn, fierce eyes intent on her brother. Tess shrieked. Kendra stared in shock. The founding Treaty of Fablehaven prevented creatures like ogres from entering the yard uninvited. How is this happening?
"Oh no!"
Seth cried, darting toward the house.
"This isn't fair!"
It shortly became apparent that Seth would not make it. The ogre was closing too quickly. The bloodthirsty brute would overtake her brother within 10 steps or so. Then another giant figure emerged from the woods on the other side of the yard, rocky limbs flailing.
"Hugo!"
cried Seth. Roaring like a landslide, the golem loped across the yard with long, bounding strides, racing to cut off the ogre before he flattened Seth. The ogre turned to confront the new challenge just before Hugo sprang at him. Though the ogre was taller than the golem, Hugo was broader through the shoulders, with bigger hands and feet. Plus, Hugo was mostly made of stone. A rocky fist bashed the ogre, knocking him through a neatly trimmed bush. The ogre rolled to his feet and started grappling with the golem. Muscles bulging, the ogre grimaced and snarled as Hugo wrenched him from one position to another. Before long, the golem had the ogre on his knees, one huge hand clutching the brute's brawny neck, the other poised to punch his face. Hugo stared down at the ogre with empty eye sockets.
"Yield,"
the golem said in a voice that reminded Kendra of boulders grating against one another.
"No,"
the ogre spat, face contorted with anger.
"I will have my prey!"
Hugo slapped his free hand down on the ogre's head and began to squeeze. The ogre groaned and tried to struggle, but Hugo just tipped him off balance and kept tightening his grip.
"I yield!"
the ogre conceded with a grunt. Hugo stood him up and shoved him toward the woods.
"Go!"
As the ogre trudged away, Kendra noticed an arrow jutting from his bloody calf. The ogre left the yard without looking back.
"What is that?"
Tess asked in a small voice, her eyes on Hugo. Kendra had almost forgotten her young cousin in the excitement.
"What do you see?"
Tess swallowed hard.
"It looks like a little tornado filled with dirt. But it went right after the bear, and now it's over by Seth."
"Sorry,"
Hugo said to Seth.
"Late. Came when heard trouble."
"It's not your fault, Hugo," Seth said.
"I have strong suspicions about where the fault lies,"
came the voice of Grandpa Sorensen as he hustled across the yard from the house.
"Seth Sorensen! What was an ogre doing in the yard?"
"Ogre?"
Tess asked. "Grandpa calls bears ogres," Kendra explained loudly.
"Yes, a bear,"
Grandpa said.
"What have you been up to, young man?"
"Nox is fine," Seth said.
"You involved your cousin?"
Grandpa asked, his face turning a shade redder.
"I protected him," Seth assured him.
Why did he need protecting?
Grandpa asked through gritted teeth. Seth hesitated.
I had this really good idea.
Enough, Grandpa said, glancing at Tess. We'll continue this in my office.
He started to lead Seth away.
Is Knox okay?
Tess asked.
He's fine, Seth said. I bet he thinks Fablehaven is a little less boring now.
Did he call it boring?
Grandpa asked, his angry tone thawing a little.
What about the whirlwind?
Tess asked Kendra, staring at Hugo. The golem noticed the attention and started to tiptoe away.
I'm sure it'll blow someplace else soon, Kendra said.
Tess squinted at it.
It went right for the bear and scared it away. Could it be a bunch of fairies? No, it looks too dusty. Nothing sparkles.
We sometimes get strange winds here, Kendra said. It was probably just good luck.
Let's go over by the fountain. It usually attracts lots of butterflies.
Kendra caught up with Seth in the upstairs hall. His head was down, and he kept banging his fist against the side of his leg. He was heading toward the attic playroom.
How'd it go with Grandpa?
Kendra asked, approaching her brother.
What do you think?
I'm grandchild of the year again. He gave me a medal.
A medal of shame?
He gave a token chuckle.
Pretty much. How is the ogre able to come into the yard?
I was trying to get some treasure back.
You stole from an ogre? You know better than that.
The treasure wasn't the problem, Seth said. We only took items the satyrs knew the ogres had stolen. They have no claim if we grab stolen property.
What went wrong?
A few weeks ago, while making our escape, we dropped the treasure near the edge of the ogre's domain. We knew the ogres were watching it, so I sent Knox in to get it.
Kendra gasped. That's what you meant in the yard? About Knox being fine? Where is he? Is he really all right?
He's back, Seth said, just kind of shaken up. The satyrs led him home.
You introduced him to Newell and Doran? Grandma told me not to let them in on the secrets of Fablehaven. They have to learn for themselves.
Calm down. To Knox, the satyrs just seem like really smart goats. Grandma brought Knox into the den while I was talking to Grandpa. Knox thinks he survived a bear attack.
Kendra shook her head. You could have gotten him killed.
I was the one in danger, Seth said. I thought I was home free when I reached the yard. Thank goodness for Hugo.
I'm more worried about our cousin.
Knox doesn't have a clue what's going on here, Seth said. I knew the treaty would protect him. The ogre couldn't touch him.
The treaty is complicated, Seth. Sometimes innocent people can get attacked for trespassing.
I brought Newell and Doran just in case.
How would they have stopped a rampaging ogre?
We always think of something. Clearly, it was a flawless plan. Good thing nothing went wrong.
Like an ogre in our yard? You practically scared Tess to death.
It couldn't have hurt anybody, Seth said. The ogre could only cross boundaries to come after me.
Why?
Grandpa explained, Seth said. Since I sent an innocent person someplace I couldn't safely go, the treaty makes me the guilty one. The ogre was free to chase me anywhere inside of Fablehaven, unless he yielded the right.
Even into the yard.
Obviously, Seth said.
Hugo made him yield, Kendra said.
So now I'm off the hook, Seth said. I should have brought Hugo in the first place.
But you were afraid he might tell Grandpa, Kendra said.
It crossed my mind. He's not great with secrets.
What's the punishment? Kendra asked.
Seth lowered his eyes. Grandpa took away my adventuring rights. I can't leave the yard without an adult human escort.
Kendra knew that would sting.
After they had all returned from the Battle of Zizix, Grandpa Sorensen had granted Seth limited permission to roam certain parts of Fablehaven with the satyrs or Hugo.
It was his favorite pastime.
"I'm sorry, Seth," Kendra said. "What was so special about the treasure?"
"Just treasure, gold and jewels."
"You risked your cousin for some gold?"
"I didn't risk him," Seth said. "I was right that he was safe. I risked myself."
"Why risk anybody?"
Seth tossed up his hands.
"If you have to ask, how am I supposed to explain? Because it's treasure, and I figured out a way to get it. What's the point of exploring if you never do anything cool?"
"Except now you can't explore anymore." "Which is better, getting grounded from exploring, or being able to explore but never doing it?" Seth said.
"I go all over Fablehaven," Kendra pointed out.
"Do you find treasure?" Seth said.
"This whole place is a treasure."
"I mean actual treasure," Seth said.
"To me, the fairies are much more of a treasure than gold or jewels, and the brownies, and Hugo, even the satyrs."
Seth shook his head.
"I like all of that too, but what about liking those things and also finding gold?"
"Why do I need gold?"
Seth rolled his eyes.
"Are you kidding? Have you heard that it's valuable?"
"Our family has plenty of money," Kendra said. "Why would I stir up trouble with the ogres for a little extra gold? Why would I endanger people for it?"
Seth closed his eyes and pounded a fist against his forehead.
"Most fun things are risky. You can get hurt playing sports. You can get hurt climbing a mountain. But it's challenging and exciting. People do those kinds of things without getting gold. The gold is a bonus."
"You like running from ogres? You like endangering your cousin?"
"I like exploring. Stuff happens. Sometimes you have to improvise."
Kendra shook her head.
"I give up. You're never going to change. You should be banned from Fablehaven."
Seth folded his arms in a huff.
"Then Coulter should have been banned. He was a professional relics collector. He spent a lot of time exploring. Patton, too. Maddox. These preserves need people like me. You killed the Demon King. Good for you. But who brought the sword?"
Kendra almost asked Seth who got Coulter killed. For the sake of the argument, she wanted to say the words, but it was too true and too painful. In a time of great upheaval, Seth had treated a demon kindly, and the demon had brought down Fablehaven.
"You're sometimes useful," Kendra said, trying her best to be diplomatic. "But we're not talking about finding a magic sword to save the world. We're talking about risking your cousin's life because you're bored."
"He was the bored one," Seth said.
"You always have an excuse," Kendra said. "It doesn't change the fact that you have caused some major disasters."
"And fixed some," Seth said. "It evens out." Kendra started walking away. Arguing with him was so pointless. But she stopped.
"Seth, you matter to me. Please be careful."
"I'm grounded," Seth said. "When I sneak out, I'll have to be way more careful."
"You have serious psychological problems."
"I'm logical to psychos?"
"Probably.
At least somebody gets me." The next day, at the pool behind the house, Kendra watched as Tess splashed in the water, several fairies orbiting her. Despite their many protests about Tess, the tiny winged women couldn't resist that she was fascinated by their favorite subject, themselves. Kendra had wondered whether Tess would grow tired of pretending fairies inhabited Fablehaven. Instead, her interest in the game seemed to steadily increase. She routinely addressed the bumblebees and dragonflies around her as fairies, and she continued to catch glimpses of their actual natures, humming a melody a fairy had sung, or accurately commenting on the color of a dress. Nox had been in the pool tossing balls at the bin that held some of the pool equipment, but now he was roaming the edge of the patio, whacking rosebuds with a stick. Kendra scowled as she watched blossoms falling to the ground.
"Don't do that to the flowers," Kendra scolded.
Knox turned, eyebrows raised.
"There are about a billion flowers here. Nobody's going to miss a few."
"They belong to Grandma and Grandpa Sorensen, and they look pretty. Leave them alone."
He swished his stick, knocking off another one.
"I finally find a decent game, and you want to wreck it. Same old Kendra."
"Are you going to take that?"
asked a shimmering silver fairy with wings like mirrors.
"Want us to teach him a lesson?"
asked another.
"Not much you can do,"
Kendra muttered under her breath.
"He's protected."
"What was that?"
Knox asked, casually chopping off another rosebud.
"I'll have a talk with Grandma Sorensen,"
she said loudly, as if repeating herself. "She likes her flowers intact."
"I brought lemonade,"
Seth declared, approaching the pool area holding a tray topped by four glasses, each with a plastic straw. He set the tray on a poolside table. Kendra was happy for the distraction. Knox tossed the stick aside and hurried over to the table. Kendra strolled that way as well.
"Are they letting you out?"
Knox asked.
"I'm not allowed to swim today," Seth said, "and I'm grounded from the woods."
Knox took a sip from the straw.
"Not bad. Thanks, Seth."
"Least I could do after almost getting you eaten by a bear. Come get some, Tess. This is a special blend that might help you see the fairies more clearly."
Kendra glared at her brother. She understood he was trying to be funny, but that was a little too close to the truth.
"How did you know the bear would be there?"
Knox asked.
"I wasn't sure," Seth said. "I'm really sorry."
"I'm just lucky you're such a scaredy cat," Knox said. "You ran away so fast that it went after you."
"You were running too," Seth said.
"You were just too slow. Bears like a challenge."
"The bear was scary,"
Tess said, dripping on the patio as she claimed a glass and took a sip.
"Do you get many of them?"
"Hardly ever in the yard," Kendra said.
"You must get some,"
Knox said. "Didn't you mention bear traps in the woods?"
"We see a few," Seth said vaguely.
"Smart goats, though," Knox said. "They're like dogs. Stayed with me all the way back to the yard."
"Good old Newell and Doran,"
Seth said. "What happened to the duffel bag?"
"I left it in the woods," Knox said. "The deal was to bring it to you, but you ran off and it was heavy. Felt like bricks.
Was the heaviness supposed to slow me down?"
"You must have known a bear cave was nearby. Did you expect it to chase us?"
"I was just goofing around," Seth said. "I wasn't expecting a bear."
"Whatever," Knox said. "At least it ended up chasing you. The power of karma. You owe me $10.
"A deal is a deal," Seth agreed. "How far did you get with the bag?"
"Just past where you were waiting for me," Knox said. "The goats returned and hurried me along. I was worried the bear might double back."
"Right," Seth said.
Kendra could hear the concern behind the word. Her brother was hoping the treasure was safe.
"So when are you going to pay up?"
Knox asked.
"Are you planning to take the money in the pool?"
Seth replied.
"I'll get it to you. But first, I need to borrow Kendra."
"I was just about to jump in the water," Kendra said.
"That'll have to wait," her brother answered.
"Since when do you tell me what to do?" Kendra asked. Seth leaned in close and whispered,
"Since Agad showed up. He wants to talk to us."
Chapter 9. Dragon Watch. When Kendra entered Grandpa Sorensen's office, something about the atmosphere made her feel she had interrupted an argument. Perhaps it was the variety of expressions. Grandpa Larson looked sad. Grandma Larson seemed angry, though she was trying to cover it up. Grandma and Grandpa Sorensen both looked concerned. Bracken was there, appearing unusually somber, and Agad looked apologetic. Perhaps it was the absence of conversation after they entered. No greetings, no small talk. Everyone just stared at her and Seth. Or maybe there really was an intangible tension in the air. Agad broke the tension first, stepping forward to greet them. Plump and elderly, he had a gray beard that hung almost to his waist. He wore a silky robe of dark blue, topped by a black cloak trimmed with sable. Rings glittered on all his fingers.
"Good to see you, Kendra," the wizard said. "Greetings, Seth."
"Hello," Kendra replied. "Nice to see you, too." She meant it. Agad had given them good advice when they were at Wormroost. He had recruited the dragons that had enabled them to win the Battle of Zizzix, and he had helped set things right at Fablehaven after the demons were locked away inside a new prison. Agad was powerful, smart, and on their side. "Hi," Seth said. "We weren't eavesdropping. Grandma Sorensen told me to bring Kendra to his office. What's going on?"
"More than you want to know," Bracken muttered.
"I always want to know," Seth insisted. "Is it bad?" Kendra asked. "Is everyone all right? Warren, Vanessa, Tanu?"
"As far as I know, your friends are well," Agad said. "They all remain on assignment."
It had been months since Kendra had seen any of them, though she felt certain that Grandpa Sorensen, as captain of the Knights of the Dawn, knew where they were. He never shared. It was all top secret. "Then what's up?" Seth asked. Agad looked at Grandma Larson.
"I'm not sure we've entirely settled on what to tell you."
"Tell us everything," Seth said.
"Careful what you wish for," Bracken warned.
"How bad is it?" Seth asked. "I don't like it any more than you do, Gloria," Grandma Sorensen said. "But you know the stakes. We should at least have the conversation." "If we have the conversation, you know what will happen," Grandma Larson said. "The only way to prevent their involvement is to keep them out of it." "Out of what?" Seth asked. Then he paled, looking at Agad.
"Oh, no. Out of prison? Is this about the ogre? Is Kendra a witness?"
Grandpa Sorensen covered a grin.
"Am I saying too much?" Seth went on. "Are there magical lawyers?"
Agad looked at Seth seriously.
"I heard about the incident with the ogre. It was unwise, but reprimanding you is not the purpose of my visit."
Seth looked relieved. "You brought us here to tell us something. Let's do it." "I agree," Kendra said, her mind flashing back to the robed figure in the driveway of Fablehaven and his dire warning. Was this related to that encounter somehow?
"You know how I feel,"
Agad announced to the room.
"I don't like it, but I would not be here if I had another option. They are remarkable children. They could be of service. However, I am not their guardian."
"Mom and Dad are on a trip," Kendra said.
"We tried to phone them," Grandpa Larson said.
"They wouldn't understand what is being asked," Grandma Larson said. "Not really. Our world is too new to them. Everything would depend on how we present it. We could make it sound like a holiday. We could make it sound necessary. We could make it sound out of the question."
"What are we talking about?" Seth asked, clearly frustrated. "What do you need us to do?"
"Go ahead," Grandma Larson said with resignation. "I suppose we know this has to happen, or we wouldn't have sent for them."
"They could decline," Bracken said.
"In theory," Grandma Larson said sadly. "Tell them."
Grandpa Sorensen nodded at Agad. The wizard cleared his throat.
"There has been unrest of late among the dragons."
"Is a storm coming?" Seth asked. "A new age of dragons?" Kendra added. Agad furrowed his brow.
"What makes you say that?"
Witches, Seth said. A demon, Kendra said.
I hope those are overstatements, Agate said. But relations are rapidly deteriorating. We could be heading in that direction.
Aren't the dragons in sanctuaries? Seth asked.
The vast majority, yes, for now,
Agate said.
May it ever be so.
Are the dragon sanctuaries in danger? Kendra asked.
We have reason for concern,
Agate said carefully.
All at once, across all the sanctuaries, the dragons are suddenly testing their limits. No sanctuaries have fallen, but in some places, the situation is turning ugly. I fear we have become too complacent over the years. We're not ready for a coordinated draconic rebellion. Give them some history,
Grandpa Sorensen said. Agate nodded.
Have you children ever wondered why we started relocating magical creatures into hidden preserves?
Seth scrunched his face. Kind of, but not really. To keep them safe? Kendra guessed.
That was part of it,
Agate said.
But it was just as much to protect humanity. And that started with the dragons.
Dragons used to run around loose? Seth asked.
Essentially, yes,
Agate said. Kendra had met dragons. The thought made her shiver.
Long ago, magical creatures dwelled alongside mortals,
Agate said.
Like tigers in the jungle, bears in the hills, or sharks in the ocean, enchanted beasts wandered the world. There were plenty of wild places back then, and coexistence was not a major problem. The unbelief of mortals helped repel most beings of a magical nature, and there were unwritten laws that generally kept humans and mystical creatures apart.
Then the dragons got greedy, Bracken said. Agate held up a finger.
Not without reason. Remember, I was once a dragon long ago. I remember those times. As mortals spread, the wild places grew smaller. Certain dragons foresaw the day when mortals would claim the entire world, and they started to fight back.
What happened? Seth asked. The Age of Dragons, Bracken said.
Dragons got carried away,
Agate said.
They started with ships and caravans. Soon it was villages and towns, even cities.
Wait, Kendra said. We would have heard of this. Agate smiled.
Are you sure? Ancient stories fade or change. Records get destroyed. The magical community has historically done an excellent job at avoiding detection by humankind. Doesn't it seem everyone should know about the preserves for magical creatures dotting the globe? Places like Fablehaven. And the enormous dragon sanctuaries.
Distractor spells, Seth said. People can see them, but they don't actually notice them.
That's the idea,
Agate said.
History can work much the same way. It helps that people don't want to believe a dragon leveled a city or burned an ancient library. They would rather believe it was a volcano or a war. There was a time when a huge percentage of towns and cities offered tribute to dragons to survive. Some gave treasure. Others provided livestock, or even people.
That's horrible, Kendra said. Agate raised his eyebrows.
It was dreadful, and getting worse every year. Many realized it had gone too far. I was among the dragons who sided with humankind. Long, long ago, before my time, a mighty dragon named Arcadius learned that by permanently taking human shape, he could greatly enhance his magical abilities. Arcadius became a wizard, the first of his kind. As you know, all true wizards were once dragons. Magic has never been for mortals. They can only borrow it from magical beings. I made the same choice as Arcadius, partly because I had become ashamed of my kind and wanted to stop them.
It's hard to picture you as a dragon, Seth said.
It has become difficult for me as well,
Agad said.
That was long ago. Once upon a time, I soared the skies and breathed fire. On occasion, I experience echoes of those days in my dreams. It's as close as I get.
You were one of the founding members of Dragonwatch, Bracken said.
You know your history,
Agat replied. I'm not as young as I look, Bracken said. Dragonwatch? Kendra asked.
The organization we formed to combat the dragon epidemic,
Agat said.
A consortium of wizards, enchantresses, dragon slayers, and many others who agreed the tyrannical rule of dragons had to end. We began the practice of confining dragons to sanctuaries. Other magical preserves followed.
Places like Fablehaven happened because you needed to stop the dragons? Kendra asked.
That's right, Agad said.
When did this start? Seth asked.
Almost 3,000 years ago,
Agad said.
It was a long and bloody process. We were still rounding up renegade dragons all the way into the Dark Ages. There were many casualties on both sides. In the end, the courage of dragon slayers and the ingenuity of wizards overcame the might of our opponents. All the hostile dragons were confined to preserves. Only dragons who had not besieged mortals and who pledged to live according to a certain code of conduct were permitted to remain in the wild.
The dragons must have been mad, Kendra said. Agad chuckled.
Furious. Dragons are not accustomed to losing. They did not go quietly. But over time, they settled into their new lives.
And Dragonwatch disbanded, Bracken said.
Not completely,
Agad said.
The organization shrank and the focus changed. Attention was placed on managing the preserves. Later, the Knights of the Dawn formed. Eventually, Dragonwatch faded away. For a time, one of your ancestors, Patton Burgess, was the sole active member of Dragonwatch.
Kendra perked up. Patton? Our Patton?
I know you idolize him,
Agad said. Only because he's the coolest guy who ever lived, Seth said.
Not a poor description,
Agad agreed.
I admired him as well. His stewardship was one of the few times a regular mortal took charge of Dragonwatch, rather than a wizard.
Who runs it now? Kendra asked.
I do,
Agad said.
I'm reforming it. The need for Dragonwatch has returned. As Seth mentioned, a storm appears to be brewing. I just hope we're not too late to intervene.
Seth brightened. I get it. You want us to join Dragonwatch. Is that what this is about?
Not exactly,
Agad said. Seth wilted.
But we may need your help with a related matter,
Agad went on. What? Kendra asked. Based on the conversation leading up to this, it had to be dangerous. Agad pressed his fingertips together.
A bit more context first. I was partially involved in stirring up this potential dragon storm.
The Battle of Zizix, Kendra said. Agad gave a nod.
I cut a deal with the dragons because we had to win that battle, and I saw no other strategy that gave us a chance. Celebrant, the Dragon King, would come to our aid only on the condition that governance of Wormroost could be passed over to dragons. He became a co-caretaker with my brother Camarat.
Who is a dragon? Kendra recalled.
Correct,
Agad said.
As a caretaker, Camarat stays in human form and goes by the name of Marat. Since he is housed at Blackwell Keep, Marat still controls who can go in and out of Wormroost. but Celebrant is working to undermine him. In effect, by seeking help from the dragons against the demons, I solved one dire problem by creating a future dilemma.
This is where the story begins to involve the two of you,
Grandpa Sorensen said.
How?
Seth asked.
Celebrant has attacked Blackwell Keep 3 times since my brother took over,
Agad said gravely.
How did Murat stop him? Kendra asked.
Blackwell Keep is protected by powerful magic that has been in place since the sanctuary was established,
Agad said, scowling in thought.
The arrangement I made granted Celebrant no access to Blackwell Keep, yet he keeps storming the stronghold. Dragons do not attack lightly. They play to win, and they prefer to win decisively. A difficult victory is perceived as weakness. A failed attack is worse, let alone 3 failed attacks.
So Celebrant thinks he can succeed, Seth said.
It would seem so,
Agad said.
The intent could be to intimidate or confuse Murat, but I suspect Celebrant has found a weakness and is trying to exploit it. The Dragon King thinks there is a way to overthrow my brother, but is yet to pinpoint the correct approach. I fear that I know the problem.
What?
Kendra asked. Agad scratched his beard.
According to the treaty established when Wormroost was founded, the caretaker should be mortal.
Weren't you the caretaker? Seth asked.
That was no problem,
Agad said.
Wizards are mortal. We age very slowly, but dragons become wizards by falling to mortality while retaining and enhancing our magic. When I left Wormroost to manage the Living Mirage Preserve, there was a shortage of candidates for a new caretaker. So I went with my brother. We conferred and decided that as long as he remained in his human form, there should be no problem.
But there is? Kendra asked.
I'm afraid that Celebrant has become aware of this detail and may have found a way to exploit it. I can find no other way to explain his aggression. Perhaps he believes he can make Murat change to dragon shape and lose the claim to his position. Or perhaps Celebrant has found some other vulnerability. But I believe having a human caretaker would resolve the issue.
What about Celebrant? Kendra asked. How can a dragon be a co-caretaker?
I had to restructure some aspects of the treaty to grant him that position,
Agad said.
Even so, the magical defenses won't protect Celebrant as they would a mortal. Not much of a problem for a dragon with so many powerful underlings, but it could leave Murat exposed.
What if Murat becomes a wizard? Seth asked. Right now he is just temporarily using his human form. Can't he make it permanent? Then he would be mortal.
Sensible,
Agad said.
But the art of turning from dragon to wizard has been lost. I only did it with the help of an older generation of wizards, all of whom have moved on. No dragon has become a wizard for more than 1,000 years.
If Murat can't become a wizard, why don't you take control of Wormroost again? Kendra asked.
Another sensible solution,
Agad said.
Unfortunately, the Soaring Cliff Sanctuary is in an even worse predicament, so I am going to take over that preserve.
Seth looked around the room.
Are you recruiting Grandpa Sorensen or Grandpa Larson?
Both capable men,
Agad said.
But the caretaker of Wormroost must be a true dragon tamer. Not just somebody who can stand in the presence of a dragon and force out a few words. He or she must be able to hold a conversation with a hostile dragon without becoming clouded by fear. Very few dragon tamers remain.
Oh, no, Kendra said.
Now you see,
Agad said.
with Kendra being fairy kind and Seth a shadow charmer, when the two of you are in physical contact with each other, you can stand tall in the presence of a dragon. Together, you are a dragon tamer. Kendra, Seth, I am here to invite you to become the next caretakers of Worm Roost.
Chapter 10. Caretakers Wanted. The silence stretched out for a long time. Kendra didn't know how to respond.
I get it, Seth finally said. This is a joke. Very funny.
Nobody cracked a smile.
I think they're serious, Seth, Kendra said, her stomach queasy.
Seth looked around the room.
Us? The official caretakers?
Co-caretakers, along with Celebrant, Grandpa Sorensen explained.
Seth failed to resist an enormous smile.
No way. Really?
Really,
Agad said.
Take a picture, Seth said. This is the best moment of my life.
Are you crazy? Kendra asked her brother. Do you get how dangerous this will be?
Do you get how in charge we will be?
Seth asked in reply.
Of one of the most dangerous magical sanctuaries in the world, Kendra said. At a time when the dragons are attempting an uprising. Right after witches warned you of dragon storms and a demon warned me about a new age of dragons.
Life is full of problems, Seth said. We'll be inside Blackwell Keep. We'll be protected.
Exactly how protected will they be? Grandma Larson asked.
Blackwell Keep and their status as caretakers should grant all the protection they require,
Agat said. Until Seth goes adventuring in the mountains, Kendra said. He'll hear about some treasure and wander off.
Exercising self-restraint would be critical,
Agat said.
He has none, Kendra said. Zero. The sanctuary will fall in minutes.
I get how huge this would be, Seth said. I'd never do anything to endanger the sanctuary.
Like how you'd never do anything to endanger your cousin? Kendra asked.
Seth placed a hand over his heart.
I've made some mistakes and learned my lesson. I promise I'll keep the rules. I'll only go where I'm allowed.
I don't believe this,
Kendra murmured.
Will we have help?
Your grandma and Grandpa Sorensen have offered to come as your assistants,
Agad said.
The Larsons would watch over Fablehaven. Blackwell Keep has a skilled, experienced staff, and Marat would remain as an additional assistant caretaker.
Seth dropped to his knees, his expression stunned.
A dragon as my assistant?
Yes, the answer is yes, with or without Kendra, yes, yes, yes.
This works only if both of you come,
Agad said.
Isn't there somebody else? Kendra asked.
Nobody I can fully trust,
Agad said.
Most of the great old wizards of Dragonwatch have passed on or are actively engaged at other sanctuaries, and wizards have never been plentiful. Remember that all wizards were once dragons. If I send a wizard there whom Celebrant can turn, the sanctuary falls, and hundreds of dragons are released. True dragon tamers have become so rare, few can resist a full measure of dragon fear. You are the only candidates left whom I know I can trust.
So we're your last choice, Kendra rephrased.
You're so young,
Agad said sadly.
I wish I had another option. We really are in a crisis. I would not be here otherwise. If you can't step in, Marat will hold out as best he can.
Please, Kendra, Seth said. We have to do this. The world needs us.
You just want to be in charge of Worm Roost, she replied.
The world needs me in charge of Worm Roost, Seth declared.
The world is doomed, Kendra muttered.
She looked to Grandpa Sorensen.
You want us to do this?
The choice is yours,
he said.
I don't want to convey a false sense of security. A preserve like Fablehaven is a perilous place. Being caretaker comes with a host of dangers.